angels. I see you in all these faces. Who are you? One step I fade away, the next step I'm born again. You're flowing in my veins. Who are you? Wherever I get tired, you call me from far and near. Whenever I get thirsty, you start to melt and say to me,
back to the program Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio. We are talking about the laws according to Ayatollah Sistani about mourning and lamentation for Imam Hussein's martyrdom during Muharram. Sheikh Javid, what is the Islamic law about wedding or nikah in the month of Muharram and Safar?
Well, nikah itself or per se is permissible because it's highly recommended to get married, and there are some people who are under the impression that nikah is not allowed, okay, because they think nikah means happiness, nikah is coupled with music, nikah is coupled or twixt with something which is forbidden. Well, nikah can be without music, nikah can be without anything like that. So nikah is to make two persons, two individuals, halal for each other.
Yes.
And it's a permissible act. It is even recommended, and according to the religion, it is half of an iman, okay?
Yes.
And a person who gets married has actually completed half of his faith and half of his iman, and he should observe piety for the other half.
Mm-hmm.
Observe piety, God consciousness for the other half.
Yes.
So there's no problem in having your nikah done on the day of Ashura, even on the day of Ashura, okay?
Yes.
But we should understand that wedding is not allowed. Wedding means calling people and giving them a feast, and then celebrating and okay, wearing new clothes, because this is what we understand from wedding, okay?
Yes.
Of course, it's not permissible because it amounts to disrespect. It's a kind of disregard to Muharram, and
mm-hmm.
we have to respect Muharram. Just as I said, the concept of Muharram is to respect those symbols and remember the suffering of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. We cannot remember the suffering of Imam Hussein and his companions by having celebration which goes against the whole
yes.
concept.
Exactly.
So it's not permissible. Wedding is not allowed, but
yes.
nikah is permissible.
By nikah, you mean the day or the time where and when the marriage formula is pronounced.
It's pronounced.
Not the wedding ceremony.
Not the wedding ceremony.
Yes. Okay.
That's what nikah means, marriage contract.
Yes.
Which can be concluded or solemnized on the day of Ashura.
Okay. And the other question, Sheikh Javid, is... is it permissible for a man to take part in a procession or a mourning ceremony where you cannot avoid coming in contact with women? In other words, your body touches their body, and that is something that happens without you having it under control.
Well, that's also a good question. You know that on the day of, let's say, Ashura, people do come out into the streets. If a person doesn't know and does not have such an intention
mm-hmm.
to make his body touch the body of a non-mahram, okay, there's no problem coming into the streets. And because we do know that women are there, men are there, and all of them can come out into the streets and actually mourn for Abu Abdullah al-Hussein alayhi salatu wassalam. But if one knows that if he goes into the crowd,
mm-hmm.
his body will come in contact with the body of a woman, and he will end up touching a woman, it's not permissible. No, none of the religious authorities actually allows coming in contact with a non-mahram, okay?
Yes.
Allowing your body to touch the body of a woman is not permissible. and if one knows that it's going to happen, it's not permissible. Not even if it's not intentional, because when you know that such a thing will happen, it's not permissible to go in and let your body touch the body of a non-mahram woman.
Yes, and it doesn't matter whether it is indoor or outdoor, because some of the groups of procession you can see in some areas around the mosque, or yeah. even in some of the areas related to or affiliated with the shrines.
Yes.
You know, it happens so that or such that some of these mourning groups, in fact, enter and come out of those places. So it would be very much, hectic and busy in those and crowded in those areas. So it's not permissible to go in that area?
Well, when you know that you will end up touching a non-mahram woman, of course, it's not permissible. Generally speaking, mixed gatherings are not encouraged at all.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it is on the day of Ashura for mourning the suffering of Imam Hussein, or it is a wedding, mixed gatherings are not allowed when it leads to such sins.
Mm-hmm. I see. Thank you very much, Sheikh Javid. Once again, I use this opportunity to express our heartfelt condolences to our dear audiences, and may God accept all of our mourning and azadari for Imam Hussein and their pure household. Thank you very much for listening to us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Every breath that you did take, every step that you would make, purpose and guidance it gave, mankind's heart it reawaked. Many people did leave the first teachings received. Hussein planned to retrieve loss of faith he perceived. Many people did leave the first teachings received. Hussein plan to retrieve loss of faith he perceived. Guide, you would be in place of Rasul to restore the sacred bridge. Light, you would radiate in the dark and continue the message. When you passed through arid sand, met foreigners of new land.
The light.
A spectacular light show has mesmerized people in a Greek capital, Athens. 200 colorful drones performed a short harmonized display illuminating the night sky. Their colors and shapes were changing alongside music tracks. The show, organized by the Athens Cultural Center, took place 120 meters above the National Opera and Library. An Afghan woman has received the gift of life at a most unlikely time while flying. 26-year-old Saman Nouri was on a plane bound for Birmingham when she started having contractions. She gave birth to a little girl in an altitude of 10,000 meters with the help of the cabin crew. Born in Kuwaiti airspace, the baby is named Hawa, which means Eve or Air in Dari. Both mother and daughter are completely healthy. The aircraft was carrying Afghan citizens evacuated from Kabul. The passengers left behind their old lives, but were gifted with a new one in a process. After all, life does find a way. A French graffiti artist has created a monumental mountaintop project to encourage a more contemplative approach to life, aiming at lifting people's spirits. The giant 1,500 square meter painting is called A New Lease of Life. It was painted on the summit of Mollison Peak in the western Swiss Alps. The 32-year-old artist says he was inspired by the likeness of childlike wonder. The mural depicts a little boy blowing bubbles in an area known for its clouds. The artist says he wanted to reflect the link between children and sky gazing.
I think we live in a world that includes anxiety, and we need a little lightness to balance it. So I believe that the clouds mean dreams and imagination. When we were kids, we liked to imagine shapes in the clouds and so on. And I believe that this is a moment where we have to breathe and also imagine the world of tomorrow with a certain lightness through daydreaming.
Saip also says he designs his creations to fit in with the environment using biodegradable paints made from natural pigments. The French artist is known for his massive graffiti works on grass that are best seen from the air. Some of his other works have adorned an impoverished shanty town in South Africa and the lawn in front of the UN headquarters in Geneva. One of Mexico's largest zoos has launched a one-of-a-kind exhibition, with the star of the show being a manatee couple. Visitors will be able to see the couple at the new exhibition, which is part of the largest aquarium in the country. The zoo received the manatee couple from the Caribbean with the intention of raising awareness for the protection of the species. Part of the ticket proceeds will go towards conservation efforts. Manatees are fully aquatic, mostly herbivorous marine mammals that are sometimes known as sea cows. These funny-looking creatures are endangered because of pollution and fishing techniques.
Paleontologists in Egypt have discovered fossilized bones of an ancient whale that could probably walk on land and swim in water. Scientists found the skull, jaw, and some ribs and identified the parts as the 43-million-year-old ancestor of the modern whale. It's also the earliest type of semi-aquatic whale found in Africa. The whale is estimated to have been 10 meters in length, weighing over half a ton, and was likely a top predator. Scientists say the four-legged whale is a key new species that helps trace the transition of whales from land to sea. Paleontologists believe that the ancestors of modern whales developed from deer-like mammals living on land over a 10-million-year period. The fossilized remains were discovered in Egypt's western desert, which was once covered by sea. A French beekeeper has invented a unique device to keep his beehives safe after suffering a traumatic loss of 35 of them to hungry Asian hornets. The device is a one-way mechanism that baits hornets with sugary water, and once they get in through a funnel, they never come out. Originally, the trap was made of wooden crates and metal mesh, but now they are 3D printed in plastic. Dennis made his first lobster pot to catch the hornets in 2016 and now makes the traps in bulk due to growing demand. The Asian hornets are an invasive insect that arrived in France via a pottery shipment from China. The killer hornet can eat through an entire hive in a matter of hours. There is a festive occasion for a Mexican zoo amid a rare birth boom in its lion enclosure. Keepers and visitors are amazed to hear roars of three newborn cubs. The three baby lions that are trying very hard to roar were born just 2 weeks ago in Zacango Zoo. The zookeepers separate them from their mother for a few hours a day to feed them because their mother cannot produce milk. The two female and male cubs would live under constant surveillance for a couple of months so that their health is reassured. They are reported to be currently in good health.
bunker built by the German army in France during World War II has now been given a new lease of life by turning it into an underground guest house. A 4,300 square feet bunker located off Breton coast in northern France was originally built by Nazi troops after invading the country in 1940. The area has been the home of hundreds of such fortifications of the German army. Half of them have been buried along sandy beaches. This underground guest house now belongs to the 52-year-old bunker enthusiast. Serge Goliot says it took 18 months to dig out the buried trench and turn it into a fully functional guest house. He says an attempt was made to preserve some historic aspects during its renovation.
What is nice is to now be able to spend time here, to have dinner, to spend the night in things like this. So we adapted the bunker while preserving a certain feel. We wanted to give the building a second life, so we are not going to live in the past forever. We saved some aspects, you know, where you are. There are historic cues, but this isn't a museum either.
Colliot says many French visitors and foreigners, including Germans, have stayed in the guest house since the bunker opened a year ago. The world's highest expressway has opened to traffic in China's Tibet Autonomous Region. It's nearly 300 kilometers long and has an average elevation of 4,500 meters. It connects the cities of Nanchu and Lhasa, shortening the travel time from 6 to 3 hours. The road passes through many picturesque areas, such as snowy mountains, grasslands, and wetlands. The expressway is also environmentally friendly. Special passages have been devised for animals to get from one side of the freeway to the other. An architectural firm in Singapore has come up with a unique idea to deal with the country's constant warm temperatures. A hotel on the island's busy business district has been covered with more than 20 species of creeping plants to keep the place cooler. A layer of vegetation blankets the facade of the Red Tower, which is growing thicker with the passage of time. The plants reduce the ambient temperature by a combination of water evaporation and releasing cooler vapor. The architect says the tower is 10 to 20 degrees Celsius cooler than nearby buildings. The green facades also reduce harmful carbon emissions, which account for over 20% in a sprawling city.
The Light is a short bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields, like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
The youngest panda at the U.S.'s Smithsonian Zoo, National Zoo that is, has turned one. Baby panda Xiao Qiji celebrates the milestone by eating a specially made fruitsicle cake with his mother, Mei Xiang, in Washington, D.C. Both pandas dug into their icy cake, an ideal treat in the hot and humid summers of the U.S. capital. Xiao has captured hearts and had many first-time experiences. Some of them include sliding and tumbling around in snow and recognizing his name, which translates to little miracle in English.
He was born during the pandemic, and given the age of his mother, we didn't think she'd have another cub. And the fact that we, not just that we had this miracle, but he has just been, he's given people moments of pure joy and pure happiness.
Xiao Qiji is a fourth surviving cub of Mei Xiang. Its older siblings now live in China under an agreement with the United States. Pandas have been reclassified from endangered to vulnerable thanks to reforestation to expand habitats in which the species can survive. there are an estimated 1,800 giant pandas in the wild.
The annual butter sculpture has been unveiled at the New York State Fair to the delight of eager spectators. The artwork was sponsored for the 53rd year by the American Dairy Association. It was carved out of 400 kilograms of butter and took 10 days to build. The sculpture is dedicated to the children who will be going back to their normal lives after the coronavirus pandemic is over. Once the fair ends, all of the butter will be broken down and turned into renewable energy. Switzerland is constructing its biggest alpine solar plant in an effort to secure renewable energy throughout the year. The 2.2 megawatt plant is expected to be completed by the end of 2021. The Mutzi site will include nearly 5,000 solar modules and produce around 3.3 million kilowatt hours of electricity. It will have the option of delivering half of its production during the winter when temperatures drop to sub-zero levels in Switzerland. The developers say the project makes more environmental than fiscal sense. Currently, the country gets less than 4% of its electricity from solar power. An eatery in Japan is giving disabled people a new lease on life by including them in its workforce. Dawn Cafe uses robotic staff controlled remotely by people who are handicapped. Around 50 people with mental and physical disabilities help run the cafe. The pilots come from all over Japan as well as overseas. The venue was established with support from major companies and crowdfunding. It has become more than just a place to eat for its customers.
Customers here are not exactly coming to this location just to meet the Orihime robots. They come here because of the people behind Orihime, and they will come back to see them again.
For Kentaro, Dawn Cafe has a very personal touch. In his childhood, he was left unable to go to school due to a period of bad health. Now he aspires to come up with ways to further the inclusion of disabled people in society. Crowds of visitors and conservationists have been delighted by the birth of a rare orangutan in the Spanish town of Fuengirola. The new residents of the safari park made its first public appearance 2 weeks after its birth. The baby, yet to be named, is the only one to be born in a European zoo over the past 12 months. The park has launched a program to conserve Bornean orangutans that are considered as a critically endangered species. Their population has declined by more than 50% over the past century. Dozens of baby turtles have made their way to the sea after an unexpected overnight hatch in Italy. Italian volunteers were surprised by track marks of the hatchlings from an unknown nest in Sicily. Some of the eggs hatched in the morning. An environmental group following the turtles' movement said that 74 hatchlings made it to the sea while 5 didn't. The reptiles are an endangered species of oceanic turtle that also live in the Mediterranean Sea. Their population has declined in recent years due to hunting, loss of beach nesting sites, over-harvesting of their eggs, and being caught in fishing gear.
As the U.S. is experiencing its worst heat wave, Boston zookeepers are working extra hard to keep the animals cool to avoid overheating. Some get frozen treats, and some, like the yak, get a water hosing several times a day when the temperatures rise. The hardest part is cooling down animals belonging to cold climates, like the reindeer. Since reindeer don't like water, the hosing down is a big no. Instead, the poor animals sit in front of a desk fan all day to stay away from the heat. The birds have it a little easier as they spend most of their time in air-conditioned dens.
Ayatollah Ahmadimiyanaji rahmatullah alayh searched about the books that have been compiled or written regarding the figure and personality of Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, and he found that this approach is missed and has not been done by any researcher.
When late Ayatollah Miyanaji reaches to the figures, historical figures and Islamic figures, selectively he presents a very enriched information about it.
Be more familiar with outstanding Shia figures in The Teacher.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Assalamu alaikum to you dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. This is The Teacher you're listening to. I'm Atta, the host of this program. With me in the studio for today's discussion are two experts from the Islamic House of Qom, two scholars, Sheikh Ali Mahdavi and Sheikh Ziyainia. Sheikh Mahdavi, assalamu alaikum, brother, and welcome to the show.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
And Sheikh Ziyainia, assalamu alaikum, brother, we're welcome to the show.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah. Thank you.
Okay, Sheikh Mahdavi, for today's discussion, we want to talk about one of the most outstanding books of the late Ayatollah Ahmadi Miyanaji, that is Makatib al-A'imma, or if you want to roughly translate it, it's Letters of the Imams. What was the main motive or motivation of the late Ayatollah Ahmadi Miyanaji to write this book or this series of the books, Makatib al-A'imma?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Before we talk about the book Makatib al-A'imma, I think we have to take a quick look into the book Makatib al-Rasul sallallahu alaihi wasallam. Actually, this is the book, if we study what was the reason and what was the cause which made Ayatollah Miyanaji to collect this book, I think we can get to this point that why he continued that work and he wrote the book Makatib al-A'imma.
That's right.
With respect to Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam, much has been written in terms of the history of Rasulullah, in terms of the things happened during the time of the Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam. But this work is unique. Why? Because late Ayatollah Miyanaji wanted to compile the letters of the Prophet, no matter where this letter has been received. Mm-hmm. By a Muslim or non-Muslim or a follower of the Abrahamic religion or follower of none.
So sorry, these are the letters that were written by the very personality of Prophet Muhammad.
Yes.
Okay, that is what Makatib means, letters.
Yes.
So it starts with the letters that were issued by Prophet Muhammad and then subsequently by the other infallible imams.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, in the upcoming.
When you say that, that's okay, because okay, we have to consider this, that all these letters mm-hmm. were issued by Prophet. Mm-hmm. So, for example, one of the letters that if you ask ordinary people about the letter of the Prophet, the first thing which comes into their minds is the letter that he wrote to Khosrow Parviz.
Yes, the king of Iran.
Yes,
and
the king of Iran at that time, that he disrespected the letter of the Prophet and he torn the letter. So this work is unique because of this, because it's a kind of compilation of all letters of the Prophet.
Okay.
So it's a kind of encyclopedia. If you want to go, if you know about one specific letter, but you cannot find it in any of these historical books.
That's right.
This is where you can find it, in Makatib al-Rasul.
Very good.
So it's a good hint for the researchers and those who are interested in reading about this specific field of history, which is letter of the Prophet. So following this work, he continued for the A'imma, the infallible imams.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we see Makatib al-A'imma. It's a huge book, which is 7 volumes.
That's all right, okay. Sheikh Ziaidi, let's get to you, brother. As Sheikh Mahtavi explained, Makatib al-A'imma is the we can't say, somehow as we can say, the completion to the collection of Makatib al-Rasul. But I want to ask about the significance of the letter itself. What is the significance of these Makatib, or the letters of Prophet Muhammad and the infallible imams? What information, what important information or pieces of history we can find in these letters? Because it must be the personal dedication of a researcher like the late Ayatollah Ahmadi Mianeji to do his research papers and research books on this point, this topic, the letters. What is the significance of letters in Islam?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. You know, the research world is something that you must have different approaches in this regard. So just looking from a single angle to the issue is not enough.
Mm-hmm.
Once you need to study the history from the point of view of, for example, ahadith.
Okay.
Another time you need to study from the point of view of history.
That's right.
Another point of view is that you study the biography of the figure, his personal life. And one of the approaches in this regard is collecting his letters.
Mm-hmm.
So Ayatollah Ahmadi Mianeji rahmatullah alayh searched about the books that have been compiled or written regarding the figure and personality of Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, and he found that this approach is missed.
Mm-hmm.
And has not been done by any researcher.
Very good.
So he wanted to perform a research that no one has done it before him.
Right.
That's why he chooses this type of research, collecting the letters of the Holy Prophet. And this is an interesting point that he compiled and written this book when he had only 23 years old.
Oh, he was 23 years old?
Yeah.
Okay.
And this is a very, noticeable point.
That's
that
right.
A person in the age of 23 is in that level of knowledge to be able to search in the original resources.
That's right.
The books that are originally quoting the letters of the Holy Prophet, because we didn't have such book previously.
Yes.
So he needed to study many books and collect the letters from these, complex of books.
And I've heard that this was not only limited to the letters, but also, we can say, some of the writings of the A'imma and Prophet Muhammad, and also the Wasaya, or the Last Will and Testaments.
By letters, he means everything that is written by the order of Ahlul Bayt or the Holy Prophet, or written by themselves,
by the very person,
or even some kinds of they will.
Okay.
For example, regarding Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, in Makatib al-A'imma, Ayatollah Ahmadi Mianeji is quoting the will that Imam Hussein alayhi salam is delivering to his brother Muhammad ibn Hanafiya, one of his letters.
Yes, okay. Thank you very much. So, Sheikh Mahtavi, when we take a look, for example, at Sayyid al-Raziz's magnum opus, Nahjul Balagha, we could find the letters and the sermons and the aphorisms, wise sayings of Imam Ali alayhi salam. Can we say that the Makatib al-A'imma, especially on Imam Ali alayhi salam, is a work something like Nahjul Balagha? The same research purpose? The research methodologies are the same?
With respect to Imam?
Yes.
Specifically with respect to Imam Hussein, we might say we have such a thing, but the information has been classified in terms of time. For example, in the era of Muawiyah, in the era of Yazid, in the era like this, the letters has been...
Is it chronological, you
yes,
mean?
Yes, it's a kind of chronological...
Ayatollah Ahmadi Mianeji ones.
Yes.
Okay, very good.
This is the thing that we are facing when we study the Makatib al-Aimmah.
This is very good.
Okay. Yeah, this is the type of putting in order the letters and the wills, and to add something more top of you brothers mentioned with respect to letters, it was sometimes asking imams some certain questions in terms of what we call it, scripts being received from different territories.
Oh.
For example, people of Khorasan, they had some certain questions. They would put it in a form of letter and they would send it to imam.
Yes.
And then they would receive the response.
Okay.
So this response of imam also is compiled in the book, which is Makatib al-Aimmah.
These are really rich treasuries, I think, and some parts of it, I think, are still held in some of the outstanding museums in the world, especially those people who are interested in calligraphy, the type of calligraphy, handwriting, and the type of, we can say, the letters and the Arabic style of writing on those days. And these show the significance of the message, I think, of Prophet Muhammad and the Aimmas that were sent to different places here and there, whether being invited by some of them or whether they are inviting them to a true message. So this is really important. So how many volumes does it have, Sayyid Ziyaniya?
This Sheikh Makatib Ziyaniya. Al-Aimmah.
Yes, Makatib al-Aimmah especially.
This book is consisting of 7 volumes.
Okay.
And Makatib al-Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam is quoted in volume 3. And one important point that I should mention is that unfortunately many of these letters we do not have any access to its original copy.
Yes.
Because during the time many books are, you know, vanished and destroyed by some people.
Yes.
Many libraries has been burned by some enemies or some, you know, we may say, ignorant people. So many of the original copies are missed today.
Yes.
We don't have access to them. But regarding the difference between Nahjul Balagha and Makatib al-Aimmah alayhi salam, we should mention this important point that Nahjul Balagha, that is a book written by Sayyid Radhi or compiled by Sayyid Radhi rahmatullah alayhi, it's not a book to compile every single words or every letter of the Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salatu wasalam. Nahjul Balagha, as its name is introducing the book, is talking about the peak of the eloquence.
That's right.
The sermons or the letters or the sentences that are on the high level of eloquence.
That's right. It's a selection, it's better to say.
So,
that's
yeah. Right. Okay. So it's a selection.
Yes. Okay.
And Sayyid Radhi was not trying to compile every word of Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salatu wasalam. He was trying to select those sentences or those sermons that was, you know, unique or noble in its sentences and its words. And even, for example, regarding the sermons itself, Sayyid Radhi, many times he does not quote the all of the sermon, but he quotes it partially.
Okay.
Why? Because he wants to quote the sentences that are in high level of eloquence.
That's right. And what's the difference to Makatib al-Aimmah?
But in Makatib al-Aimmah, Ayatollah Ahmadi Mianeji is not, you know, choosing the sentences or the letters.
Selecting.
No, he is, you know, compiling the letters and trying to quote all of them.
The whole documents that exist about each imam. Okay.
So even about Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam, he has a part in his book that quotes that some letters, that these letters are related to, or we may say that are related by other people to Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam, and we are not completely certain that these letters are written by Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam.
By the very personality of Imam Hussein or not. Okay.
So because he intended to collect every letter, even he collected the letters that he himself was not sure that whether they are exactly you know, given by Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam or not. But he collects them and gives this option to the you know, audience of the book, that you yourself decide, study it, and then you may have, you know, this decision and, you know, option to quote it from Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam.
But it's still the references and the resources are over there, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure.
It has been searched, okay.
And you know why he has done this? The reason is that sometimes I, as a researcher, mm-hmm. do not have access to some, you know, resources, because yes. these resources are in maybe a library in a corner of the world.
Okay.
But after me, maybe 50 years later, 100 years later, a researcher find the resources.
Okay.
So I quote the letter right now. Mm-hmm. Even I'm not sure about the, you know, resource completely.
Yes.
I quote it because I have found some signs regarding this letter that yes. is letter is related to Imam Hussein alayhi salam.
Okay.
And inshallah, in the future generation of researchers may find the right. resources and give more asanid.
Okay. Yes.
For this These kind are of letters.
Yes. The finding the traces and the authentic yes. traces and documents regarding these letters. Thank you much, Sheikh Mahtavi and Sheikh Ziaynia. We have to stop it now for Makatib al-A'imma and Makatib al-Rasul, but we'll continue our discussion on this book. It was very kind of you, Sheikh Ziaynia.
You're welcome.
And Sheikh Mahtavi.
You're most welcome.
And dear listeners, thank you very much for listening to this episode of the program, The Teacher. For more information, visit our website, parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam Radio, also a YouTube channel and Instagram page, Call of Islam Radio. To another episode, God bless you all. في أمان الله.
I don't fear if from your cradle you depart. You sleep in the deepest oceans of my heart. But if for only a second from me ocean in my heart would be torn apart.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/EN.
تمام ارزش‌ها و صفاتی که انسان احترام می‌گذاره، همه این ارزش‌ها در علی ابن ابی طالب جمعه.
Human in general, whether a Muslim, non-Muslim, or even a disbeliever, respect the values present in the character of Ali ibn Abi Talib.
لا يقيم أمر الله سبحانه إلا من لا يصانع ولا يضارع ولا يتبع المطامع.
Imam Ali عليه الصلاة والسلام, the reason we love him as our hero, or not only in the material sense, in the spiritual sense, in the leadership sense.
Universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam in To My Brother. Imam Ali alayhi salam, the most distinguished and extraordinary personality in Islam after the Holy Prophet Muhammad. His entire life is a struggle for the advancement of Islam, the universal religion prescribed by Allah for all of humanity. Imam Ali alayhi salam was the living miracle raised up by the Holy Prophet Muhammad himself, and was not only the successor and the executor of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, but as history testifies, he was also a great human being, a brave defender of Islam, a just and fair judge, a generous philanthropist, a champion of the people, and the most pious person of his time.
قال علي عليه السلام الاستغناء عن العذر أعز من الصدق به.
Imam Ali said, "Not to be in need of putting forth an excuse is better than putting forth a true excuse." Welcome back, dear friends. It's great to have you with us on the program. You're listening to IRIB English Radio, the program's To My Brother, and we were discussing the universal persona of Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib alayhi salam. So, dear friends, it is evident to everyone that Imam Ali alayhi salam was the most pious of his time. Of course, when the Holy Prophet of Islam was alive, he was the second most pious. But after the passing of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, we find, of course, that in Imam Ali's own time, he was the most pious person. It is interesting, but Imam Ali alayhi salam has left behind a heritage of beautiful and profound night prayers and moving supplications. Of course, supplications such as the supplication of Dua-e Kumail. It is recorded in history that Imam Ali was so devoted in his prayers, in his namaz, in his salah, that he didn't pay attention to anything but Allah. And so, dear friends, this itself is a very important and critical point. If we want to be the best kind of Muslims, if we want to become mu'mineen, those of a higher standard of faith and iman, then we must pay attention to our prayers, our supplications, and if possible, our night prayers. These night prayers which have been highly encouraged in Islam. But of course, before we get to the night prayers, we must be able to have mastery over the daily wajib, the obligatory prayers, right? The fajr and the dhuhr and asr, the maghrib and the isha. These wajib prayers must be performed by a devoted Muslim, a devoted believer, a pious human being who is a follower of Islam. And here again we find that two of the things that we learned from Imam Ali, of course, is this emphasis on prayers. And historically you will find in many places where the companions of Imam Ali really wondered about his being steadfast upon prayers, that too at their prescribed times, not later or the qadha, the lapsed times, but at their prescribed times, that Imam Ali was always at the forefront of fulfilling these prayers. And of course, if we look at Dua-e Kumail, this supplication that is read on Thursday nights, we will find that it is a very moving, a very profound, and in it of itself is a spiritual journey for anyone who decides to read this Dua-e Kumail. Profound lessons which we learn from the universal persona of Imam Ali, to keep up our prayers and to supplicate to Allah with our heart and our soul. Again, beautiful lessons brought to us by the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam.
IRIB English Radio. You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Ask you for the protection of the day when property will not avail, nor sons except he who comes with a heart free from evil. Ask you for protection on the day when the unjust one will bite his hands, saying, "Oh, would that I had taken away with the messenger."
Wa
ask you for protection on the day when the guilty shall be recognized by their marks, so they shall be seized by the forelocks and the feet. Ask you for protection on the day when a father shall not give any satisfaction for his son, nor shall the child give any satisfaction for his father. Surely the promise of Allah is true.
We invite you to listen to Sayyid Muhammad Ridhvi.
Ali was even kind to the enemies. There are so many examples we have in his life, and inshallah tomorrow we'll discuss even more about it, that how was the attitude of Amir al-Mu'mineen in dealing with the enemies, let alone those who were friends. Look at the case of Ibn Muljim. And some of the young people have difficulty in understanding that Amir al-Mu'mineen knew Ibn Muljim, and what is he, and what are his intentions. There was a time when Ibn Muljim was there to collect the monthly distribution from Baytul Mal, and his name was also there in the list. And Amir al-Mu'mineen was standing there looking at the distribution of the Baytul Mal, the money being given out to the people. And he noticed Ibn Muljim in the line, and he says to one of his companions, "Uridu hayatuhu wa yuridu qatli." I desire his life, but he is looking forward to my murder. And so this fellow says that if that is the case, Amir al-Mu'minin, you know what are his intentions. You know, why don't you just arrest him? And this is where justice comes in. He says he has not yet, committed the crime. Ali knew about it, not because of the normal channels of the spies and this and that. No, this was ilm al-ghayb. And we get this question sometimes that, if he knew, why didn't he stop? This is where we have to realize, and just to make it very brief, to have ilm al-ghayb is actually an extra burden on these awliya of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. They are given the knowledge of the unseen, the thoughts and the minds of the people, what they have in their minds and their thoughts, but they are not allowed to use it when it comes to themselves. They can only use the ilm given to them if they have to prove the truth of the madhab or the claim of imamat. They cannot use it for their own personal issues. And that makes their imtihan, their test and trial, even more difficult. It's easy for us to go through a difficulty and challenging, not knowing what is in the next step, next day or next week. But if you know because of the supernatural means of knowledge that given to you, still you are going through the natural cause and effect in life, that becomes even more challenging and difficult. And Amir al-Mu'mineen, didn't do that.
Dear listeners, we hope you enjoyed this episode of To My Brother. Don't forget to visit